Aging is real, and so are the benefits of adding Vital Proteins collagen peptides to your daily routine. New Vital Proteins collagen sparkling water, your daily glow up, now in 3 fresh flavors: strawberry blossom, lemon lime, and blood orange. Improved skin health in as little as 30 days thanks to collagen peptides. Cheers to that, or go with our classic collagen peptides so you can stay vital, stay you. Visit vitalproteins.com to learn more and where to buy.
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Wall Street Journal: Los Angeles on edge as Trump sends in Marines. Pentagon says roughly 700 Marines and thousands more National Guard troops are being mobilized amid anti-ICE demonstrations. They're now anti-ICE demonstrations. This is about migration, of course, and the big picture, but I need to attend to the license for this for the President of the United States to supervise the deployment of not only National Guard, but also United States Marine Corps. And I welcome Andrew McCarthy, my colleague, for the National Review Online, writing about the intricacies of the various statutes that have been invoked by the White House in order to demonstrate authority in Los Angeles. Andy, a very good evening to you. It's called Section 12406 of the Armed Forces Law, Title 10 U.S. Code. What powers does it grant to the chief executive, quite distinct from the powers of the governor of the state? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, it explicitly recognizes statutorily something that I think is just a fact of constitutional law, which is that if there is a danger of violent insurrection or violent rebellion, the president has the authority to federalize or call up the state National Guard and make them federal troops. And they are then under the authority of the United States government and the commander in chief. I actually think if there were no congressional statutes, John, that were pertinent to this, the president would have this authority under Article 2 of the Constitution. And there is case law from the Supreme Court going back to the Civil War era for the proposition that the president has not only the duty, but the obligation to protect the United States in the event of the incipient violent rebellion. So he does have that authority. Federal law is also very strong on the proposition that if the federal government, and this is the executive branch, obviously, is carrying out legitimate federal responsibilities, the president has complete authority to protect not only the execution of those laws, but also to protect federal personnel and federal facilities like courthouses and other federal office buildings. So the president, whether it's statutorily or I think the real reservoir here is Article 2 of the Constitution. He's on very firm legal footing here.
Or is there a debate, because it appears to be scholars weighing in on this, about the meaning of the word rebellion or the meaning of the word insurrection? Are those being challenged now as inarticulate or overbearing or inapplicable?
Well, I think, you know, you'll have constitutional scholars who will nitpick in any situation just because intellectually it's satisfying. But the fact of the matter is, after the Capitol riot and the fact that that was a, you know, it was just a 3-hour riot that was very limited, not only in time, but in space. And none of the security forces, there were significant injuries to police officers. I think over 140 of them were injured, but no one was killed. And the damage was so minimal that Congress was able to reconvene in the Capitol that very evening and actually certify Biden's victory as president. So the Democrats nevertheless referred to the 3-hour riot as an insurrection, and even tried in Colorado and I believe Maine to get Trump knocked off the ballot on the premise that what happened on January 6th was an insurrection. So I think at this point, with having hyperbolized what an insurrection was in that connection, they don't have much standing to now complain that this isn't a rebellion. And also, you have the, you know, the issue of the eye test. The American people night after night are seeing what's going on in Los Angeles, seeing the attacks on police with, you know, fireworks that could be lethal, with, you know, big, heavy rocks, with other objects, setting, you know, vehicles on fire, attacking federal buildings. So it's very difficult to make the argument that this isn't a rebellion. And some of the news coverage, which refers to it, what's their favorite term, a mostly peaceful demonstration, to say that sort of thing when in the background we see the, you know, parts of the city on fire, I don't think those guys have much credibility.
My memory of these matters is that it is a crime immediately to resist arrest of a federal authority or to attack a federal authority, or even a local authority, but a federal authority, or the possession of the federal government, such as a building, to break windows,
right,
or to push back against an ICE officer or a member of the military, a member of the National Guard, all of whom have been federalized. Is that enough just to assault a federal officer?
Oh, yes, it absolutely is. And you don't even need to have actual physical contact, just the credible perception of incipient use of force. So, yes, that's true. I actually prosecuted terrorists back in the 1990s using a device that was known as the Seditious Conspiracy Statute, which is still in federal law. That has a range of conduct that it addresses, at the very top of which is levying war against the United States. But as you go down, the other things that are illegal under the statute, and this is a 20-year felony if you get convicted, are forcibly resisting the government, attacking the government forcibly, attacking government agents forcibly, effectively seizing federal property, attacking federal property. So the federal government, as long as it's pursuing something that is legitimately constitutionally within its authority, and the courts have held for a century that immigration enforcement is a federal responsibility, principally, then the law is very strong on the president's side that he can take whatever measures are necessary to protect him, to protect federal officials, protect federal facilities, and to execute the federal law.
12406 has, as you've identified in your National Review piece, a language that suggests there's something irregular here. It reads, orders for purposes of calling the guard into federal service shall be issued through the governors of the relevant states. Governor Gavin Newsom has refused to commit that order because he says that the situation was under control. That's what he said, I believe, over the weekend. It doesn't look under control, but it's his opinion. So by bypassing the government, the governor himself, who's empowered by 12406, is that the conflict? Is that the basis for the lawsuit said to be coming from the Attorney General of California?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, John. He's interpreting that to say that he has a veto over whether the president can federalize the California National Guard. But not only does the statute say no such thing, I would again point out that the president's main authority here comes from Article 2 of the Constitution, not a statute from Congress. And what that statute requires is nothing more than that Gavin Newsom, the governor of Florida, be in the chain of command to the extent that they are consulting with him. It doesn't give him a veto. It doesn't suggest that he can tell the California National Guard to stand down if the president has called them into federal service. And it doesn't give him permission either to interfere with the commander in chief's chain of command over troops that have been federalized, or to interfere with the enforcement of federal immigration law.
I watched a video this morning, and you never know where they come from, and it's always on these Instagram sites, of the looting of an Apple store in Los Angeles. It was extremely reminiscent of the looting of stores during the troubles in 2020, during the pandemic. Extremely. Young men, all dressed in black, with their faces covered, running very fast. I mean, strong young men, big shoulders, quick. Running through the store, grabbing things, put them in bags and backpacks and running out again with sirens going on. This is not a protest about ICE. This has turned into looting and plundering and mayhem. And the governor is still refusing to endorse the use of his National Guard. Is that correct, Andy?
It is. And I think this is the penchant of the modern Democratic Party, the contemporary Democratic Party, to get on the wrong side of issues that are not close calls within the American electorate. We often call them 80-20 issues. We were joking on offline, you know, maybe this isn't even 80-20 when you look at some of the imagery that we're seeing. But in there, you know, Trump calls it Trump derangement syndrome. I don't know if that's an exact prescription, but it's pretty close, because he does seem to have this talent to draw the Democrats into supporting things that are of passionate interest to a fringe part of the progressive base, but are generally opposed by most people in the country. And it really, I think, strengthens Trump politically to turn the Democrats loose to whether they're, you know, making arguments on behalf of people who are looting, on behalf of illegal immigrants, many of them with criminal records, who are the main target in this phase of Trump's immigration enforcement. We've seen it with pro-Hamas demonstrators for the last year and a half. He does seem to have a way to draw out the fact that they are very quick to get behind things that are deeply unpopular with the country broadly.
I'm speaking with Andrew McCarthy of the National Review Online, writing about the turmoil in Los Angeles. We're going to turn to a story that's quieter, but nonetheless a fascination, about a Salvadorian national who now faces human smuggling charges in the United States after being a cause celeb by for members of Congress having to do with deportation, in a ineffective or inadequate or incorrect deportation of this Salvadorian to Salvador.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Your social media feed delivers plenty of advice, but it doesn't know you. It doesn't ask questions. It doesn't give physical exams or order tests. Doctors do. At the American Medical Association, we believe the best care starts with a real conversation with someone who understands the science and your unique health. So stay curious, ask questions, but when it's time to make decisions, make them with a doctor. Learn more at AMAHealthVersusHype.org. That's AMAHealthVSHype.org.
Shell V-Power Nitro Plus fuels every drive from Lake Erie to the Ohio River with a fuel like no other. It provides your engine with unbeatable cleaning power by destroying engine deposits to improve performance. That means more power when you need it, and more performance with every drive. Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. More power, more performance. Chances are you're not far from a Shell station. Download the Shell app to find it. Formulation unique to Shell. Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Gasoline compared to lower octane minimum detergent gasoline. Actual effects and benefits may vary according to vehicle type, driving conditions, and driving style. See shell.us/more for more information.
Eczema's unrelenting itch and rash. If you know the feeling, you should know the facts. The eczema medication you're taking may not be right for you. Visit MyRawTruth.com and talk to your dermatologist about your symptoms and treatment options.